From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. I want to thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Got a bunch of news coming up. Landlords in Newburgh have been ordered to pay $400,000 to tenants who lived in deplorable conditions for years. We will hear from some of those tenants in their own voices coming up at the end of the program, thanks to the New York Public News Network. First up, we will have some additional background on that story. Plus, New York's senators are now asking questions about the possible ICE warehouse in Orange County. And we have a third story from Orange County, actually. A giant party thrown by a short-term renter totally trashes a mansion in Monroe. For all of these stories, I spoke with Lana Bellamy earlier this afternoon. Lana Bellamy, welcome back to the Local Edition.
Hi, it's always good to be here.
We want to start off with an update about a story that I want to remind the listeners. This happened a couple of years ago, so they might have forgotten, but there was a police chase, a state trooper chase back in 2024 that ended up with somebody being shot fatally. What's the latest?
Sure, yes, and it might be good to remind everyone of how this started and how it all unfolded. The person who died, Albert Melendez, is 32 years old from Middletown, and this all started when Ulster County Sheriff's deputies found that the vehicle that he was driving had suspended registration. So it began by deputies trying to get him for a traffic stop, but he didn't stop. And so when he continued on into Sullivan County, troopers then picked up the pursuit, and then it became sort of a high-speed, not sort of high-speed, but it was very high-speed. It was 90 miles an hour on Wurtsboro Mountain Road, and everything came to a point when he was trying to turn around at the intersection of Rock Hill Drive and Emerald Place, if anyone remembers where that is, and because he was trying to avoid a roadblock. And then at that point, a trooper, his name is Russell T. Peters, he's really at the center of all this, he was riding in a state police patrol car that was driven by another trooper. He got out to try to stop Melendez from turning around and taking off. But Melendez did not stop, and instead he drove the car and hit the trooper's legs. That's when Trooper Peters then fired off, we now know, 8 shots, and he hit Melendez in his chest, abdomen, arms, and his left leg. And then Melendez ended up dying later at Garnett from his injuries. So that sort of reminds us all how we got here. Now, his death was investigated, reviewed by the AG's Office of Special Investigation. And that office reviews cases where people are killed in police encounters or by police officers and determines whether or not charges should be brought.
So this is a standard involved. Sort of investigation? That means like this happens in any case like this?
Yes. So anytime a law enforcement officer, a deputy, a city police officer, a state police trooper, if they kill a person in the act of their duty, then the AG's Office of Special Investigation will investigate that. And a lot of times what this means is reviewing body camera footage or dash camera footage if that is a component of what happened. And that was the case here. So I remember not long after Melendez was killed, the AG's office had released camera footage. And so we did see a little bit of what had happened. But now this latest update is actually the investigative report, and the AG's office is determining that they will not file charges against the trooper who killed Melendez.
So they've found that, but they also had something to say about police chases, right?
Yes. So police chases are pretty controversial, and that is something that Sarah Trafton included in her story. So as of August 2025, the Office of Special Investigation has reviewed 120 civilian deaths that have happened after an attempted traffic stop, and another 44 were incidents where a police officer, either on or off duty, was a driver in a fatal motor vehicle accident. So the state police has revised its vehicle pursuit training manual since Melendez has died, but the AG's office is actually recommending that they do make a change because the update, it still doesn't limit pursuits based on what types of crimes are involved. So the AG's office thinks that that needs to be reviewed further.
Right. And this seems to be a recurring theme in the last couple of years in stories like this, is increasing scrutiny being brought on the question of police chases, but not just by activists, advocates, or members of the community, but like you know, officials and investigators and state agencies are kind of starting to say this more.
Yes, definitely. I mean, the biggest case that comes to mind when you're thinking about it is State Trooper Christopher Baldner and Monica Goetz, you know, 11-year-old Monica Goetz, who was killed during that police chase when Baldner pursued her father in Ulster County. So there is this question, right, of, okay, why are you pursuing this person? At what point is it justified to keep going with the risk to not only the officer's life, but the people who are being pursued? And so, you know, even though Melendez's case is a bit different than the Monica Goetz situation, because he wasn't killed in the chase necessarily. He was killed at that point when he was trying to turn around and then he struck the trooper who was outside of his car. But it still all comes back to this moment when police decided to pursue him because of a suspended registration, you know.
Is there any statement from the trooper who is being investigated? Do we know what his response is to these findings?
I don't know that we actually got that, although we do know a little bit about the interview that he had with investigators from the AG's office. And, you know, he had said that he wasn't sure of how many times he had fired his gun in the moment. And he actually said that he started shooting when he saw Melendez put his hand on the gear shift. So he was actually he was worried that he was going to reverse the car and hit him again. So, you know, Melendez hit him once and struck his legs, and then he fired, and he's saying that he thought that Melendez was going to try to do it again.
All right. Thank you for that update. The next story is, well, going back at the beginning of the month, we all learned that the federal government is planning to lease a large warehouse in Newburgh. And, you know, records indicated that this would probably be for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. We've heard from local officials speaking out against this in Orange County. We heard from Representative Congressman Pat Ryan. But now, as I understand it, New York's senators are weighing in on this question.
Yes, they are. Senator Chuck Schumer and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, they both decided that they also, you know, really wanted to sort of get into this, get their hands dirty and try to figure out what is going on here. So they both sent a letter to Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen and General Services Administration Administrator Edward Frost, and they really want to know what's going on here. And they outlined 16 questions, which I won't go through all of them, but, you know, basically they're asking, what's going to be the intended use of this building? What's your timeline for becoming operational? Who is really benefiting from this agreement as far as the owners and whoever's receiving the rent payments? Who would be held here if it would be a sort of detention facility? Would it be families, singles, children? Would they have access to internet? Like, what would they be provided? I mean, it really shows you the lack of information that we all have on what's really going on here.
Yeah, and it's often when the question of Immigration Customs Enforcement, comes up in public discourse, what you find is, you know, folks from the current administration in Washington and their supporters, you know, often saying like, well, you know, they've got a job to do and they've got to do it for people's safety. And people really should be on board with helping them in this. But here we're hearing once again that there's just not a lot of detail, even if people locally wanted to help, that there's a lot that is just not known.
Yeah, and I think that, of course, we know that our senators are very critical of how ICE has pursued its work. But the sort of sense that I got in reading the release and looking at the letter is also that a lot of this agitation locally from people who have, you know, protested against this facility, a lot of it is because we just don't have any answers about what is going on. I mean, when Maria was looking at, a reporter Maria was looking into this, and just to remind everyone, this is a 42,000 square foot warehouse sort of facility in the town of Newburgh, right across from Stewart International Airport. You know, Maria found that this lease agreement is a 15-year agreement where the government would pay the owners $35.5 million to use the space. And even though she saw that it was owned by an entity, which I don't really like that word, but I really can't think of a better word for this group.
Right.
Leverage Enterprises, Inc. And it appears to be based in Houston, but Maria just could not find or get in touch with the owners here. So it just feels very intentional that information is not being shared. And so then we naturally have the question, well, why not, you know?
Yeah, and the senators in their letter say, quote, "This lack of transparency has alarmed leaders and stakeholders at every level, creating unease among those who are expected to deal with this reality of any upscaling of DHS and ICE operations in their communities," end quote. I did misspeak there. They said expected to deal with the reality, not this reality. But you can hear where they're coming from. And again, we've been hearing this from local leaders at the ground level, just saying like, hey, you know, there's just so much that we don't know. And the administration's really not communicating it. This is the Local Edition. I'm talking to Lana Bellamy, editor with Times Union Hudson Valley. We have more stories coming right up, including the story of a historic Hudson Valley mansion being trashed after a giant party was thrown by a short-term renter. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
We're in an era when power has to do with your networks, and keeping Saudi Arabia in the electric grid and building nuclear power with the U.S. is a better alternative than letting them do it with someone else.
I'm Rachel Abrams. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
This week on Cat's Cast, the running kind returns to the Catskills with a zero-carbon mountain race at Bel Air, pushing the limits sustainably.
As we get further down the line of dealing with different climate catastrophes and whatnot, it's the little things that matter, and we're using the trails. We should be stewards of the trails.
Saturday at 11 a.m. right here on Radio Catskill.
It's a Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, and I'm talking with Lana Bellamy, editor with the Times Union Hudson Valley. Lana, we've got an update on a story that we've been following about Newburgh tenants that were living in some pretty poor conditions. You want to remind us where the story started and what's the latest?
Of course, yes. Poor is probably putting it pretty lightly. And, you know, with our story, we have some photos of what those living conditions looked like at McKinney Apartments in the city of Newburgh, which are, it's a complex that serves low-income renters. And they had been complaining for really years about the conditions of this complex, where sewage would leak from their toilets, there would be pests such as like mice infestations. Roofs were leaking. But I'll always remember this past, it wasn't this past winter. It was maybe, anyway, I remember when they were very upset at the lack of heat and hot water, and it was very cold at the time. And a lot of people were demanding that the city officials do something about this. And, you had at the time city manager, he's now the former city manager, Todd Venning, and Mayor Torrance Harvey and some of the council members, and they went to the complex. They were trying to get something done, and they weren't able to. And so after that, at that point, then Attorney General Letitia James and U.S. Rep. Pat Ryan actually personally visited this complex to see the issues for themselves. And after that visit, Letitia James decided to sue the owners, and that happened in February. So now we're seeing sort of the fruits of that lawsuit, and they have reached a settlement to give the tenants more than $400,000 in refunds for rent payments.
So that's a pretty big verdict there, a $400,000 settlement. How many tenants are we talking about? How many people will that be split between?
Yeah, there's about 100 residents that will benefit. Another part of this agreement, too, is that this owner needs to fix all of the outstanding violations, and there were more than 160 of those in February. So if any of those are still need attention, then the residents are going to see maybe not everything fixed all at once and all of their money all at once, but hopefully it's not over too long of a time period before they're made as whole as possible.
Okay, well, thank you for the background on that. I'll remind the listener, we do have more detailed reporting on that same story, including some reactions from the tenants there in Newburgh coming up after we're done talking together here. But Lana, I know you have one more story. It's a different type of trashed housing story. This is apparently people that trashed a house, a mansion in Monroe on purpose.
Yes, this was a pretty wild one. It was pretty much, I would say, the nightmare of every short-term rental property owner and the dream of every party promoter. The homeowner of this historic mansion in Monroe, there got a nasty surprise when he found out that the young family he thought he was renting his property to for the weekend was actually a party promoter who hosted a Project X mega bash, and it ended with the place just getting totally trashed. Now, I have learned in my newsroom that perhaps it's a kind of like narrow population or age group who really knows what Project X is, and I just so happen to fit into that. And so,
okay, because I gotta say, that's my biggest question about this story that I was hoping somebody could explain to me. So, what is a Project X party?
Okay, so Project X, it comes from this 2012 movie, and I remember it was the when it came out, it was timed along with the end of my college career. So it's kind of got this Cloverfield found footage vibe, but it's basically a teen comedy about a party that grows out of control and just descends into chaos. It's kind of almost even like apocalyptic. Like, it's just outrageous. So that's what it sounds like happened here. I mean, and you should have seen and you can, if you look at the story, you will see the flyer that went around for this party. I mean, it was pretty ridiculous, but it does really actually kind of match that atmosphere of the Project X movie. Quite
oh my gosh. It says biggest project. I mean, clearly this is like an AI generated flyer. There are tons of people hanging out all over like a White House looking mansion. in this flyer with show lights hanging on it, like you're at a concert, and police cars and lots of fire for some reason. Now, in the actual party, it doesn't look like there's a lot of fire damage, but there's all kinds of other damage going on.
Right, exactly. So, you know, this party, a neighbor estimated that 1,000 people ended up showing up, that 200 people or thereabouts were probably in the pool that was outside of the mansion at one time, and that it carried on until about 5 a.m. And so this was back earlier this month. She also interestingly said that state police were called multiple times to come to the party, but a spokesperson for the agency told us that troopers really didn't see any sort of criminal activity. So all they could really do was just increase their patrols to deter criminal activity, but they really couldn't shut it down. And so after everything was said and done and all of the partiers fled, the homeowner came back and found their cabinets were broken, their windows were smashed, the septic was clogged, backing up into the house, and tragically, a 150-year-old baby grand piano was just destroyed. If I recall, I think one of the legs was taken off of it. So it's pretty extensive stuff. Beyond just the trash that was laying around.
So if this was like a temporary rental, there has to be somebody's like name on the rental. Are they on the hook for all of this damage?
Oh, yeah, it seems so. And they had been in the process, according to a Monroe official that Sarah Trafton had talked to, they were in the process of applying for a short-term rental permit when all this went down, and they had listed this place on booking.com. So as of when we reported on it a couple of days ago, state police also said that they weren't aware of any charges that had been filed in this. Although, you know, the DJ who was part of the promotion of the party, it's not like people are being quiet about attending or having thrown it or anything. I mean, he is posting all kinds of video and photos on his Instagram. So it's all out there.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So, I mean, there may be yet another shoe to drop for this story then as people look into it.
Perhaps.
Yeah. And maybe not. Maybe it'll just be a party that gets forgotten. Not every giant party gets a museum built for it in the end, like happened with Woodstock over here in Sullivan County. So we'll see. We'll see where this story ultimately falls with the purported largest Project X party in the world. Will it go down in history that way? We will find out, and maybe Times Union will let us know. We're talking to Lana Bellamy, editor with Times Union. Thank you so much for all these stories.
Of course, anytime.
And remember, all of those stories are up now at timesunion.com. Yes, we have more reporting on that settlement against the owners and managers of the Kenny Apartments in Newburgh. On that settlement because they failed to properly maintain their buildings and apartments. WAMC Lower Hudson Valley's Elias Guerra visited the complex yesterday to hear tenants' reactions to the news.
As children played outside the Kenny Apartments in Newburgh Wednesday, tenants gathered on their stoops and were in good spirits. Enjoying the warm, breezy day, folks were ecstatic about the settlement between New York Attorney General Letitia James and their apartment complex's owner and managers. They will collectively receive more than $400,000 in rent refunds for the payments made while living in what the state's lawsuit described as inhospitable conditions. Pearline Howard, who goes by Pearl, says this past winter, many residents had no hot water or heat.
We all should get our money back because pain is suffering. And we was cold up in here. It was the time that it was cold that I didn't want to get up and go to work. Then washing in cold water. Who does that? Who does that? You know, everybody was taking a shower, nice hot water, and we taking cold showers. And then got to come out in the cold to go to work.
The settlement James announced earlier this week also included an agreement from the owners of the complex to make the necessary repairs to ensure tenants' homes are safe and livable. The Attorney General filed the suit in February against the owners and managers of the complex that is home to more than 100 low-income residents over living conditions, including failure to fix dozens of code violations. In January, James said no one should have to make the decision Kenny tenants were having to make.
No senior, no parent, no child should be forced to endure sewage flooding from their apartment, mold in their walls, or rats in their kitchen while their landlords ignores their pleas for help. And that is exactly what has happened at Kenny Apartments here in Newburgh.
Anna Alvarez has lived in the apartment for 17 years and was in good spirits Wednesday, but she still remembers this past winter as a terrible time to endure.
I mean, we have to carry buckets to warm up water. You know, we have to find a way to get heated. People was donating heating blankets. I mean, I'm sure everybody's gone through it. And even others had worse. They couldn't get their medicine because they had no refrigerator working. They had to come outside, put the medicine in the snow so they can have their injection. What do you call those things? For their diabetes and stuff like that. Yeah. So there's a lot of people that really gone worse than what I have, you know. I mean, we all have, but worst, you know. Sad, but I'm glad victory. I mean, I'm happy.
Alvarez says she has heard they will also be getting new appliances, and she's excited to have all of the repairs finally get taken care of.
Looking forward for this whole place to get a new life, you know, because it really needed. Because the way it is right now, it really need a lot of help. You know, a lot of people don't have, floors are all messed up, you know, walls need to be painted. When you call them, they never answer the phone or come. And half of the time, I pull out of my pocket to buy the stuff to put in my apartment. You know, and it shouldn't be like that.
Under the settlement, the owners must take immediate actions to repair outstanding code violations, including mold remediation, plumbing fixes, repairs to doors, windows, floors, and new paint. Beyond rent abatement and repairs, the owners will have to make monthly reports to the Attorney General's office documenting their progress, including any new issues that arise. James said in a statement, quote, "This case should be a warning to landlords throughout our state. If you ignore your tenants' complaints and fail to address code violations, my office will make you pay for your negligence." Kenya Gallardo could not be happier about the news. She will believe it, though, when she sees the rent they are actually supposed to be paid back actually in her hands.
Oh, I'm so happy. We don't know yet. If you get the money, I'm so happy. So all my money out there, I'm going to spend on clothes, trip and everything. So if you get the money, so I'm still not going to spend the money. I'm still going to wait for the money. But I'm starting tomorrow. Cross your finger, there is O2, right? So I can get all the money.
For the New York Public News Network, I'm Elias Guerra.
Thank you, Elias, and the New York Public News Network for that report. Thank you for being here with me for the local edition. I'm Jason Dolan. That is it for the local edition tonight. Do remember, we have more news for you whenever you need it at WJFFradio.org. That's where a lot of our stories go. The latest local and regional news there at WJFFradio.org. And did you download our app yet? We have a newly refurbished app. It's in the app stores, whichever app store you use, and it's probably the best way to stay up to date on the latest local news and information from Radio Catskill, as well as a great way to listen to us wherever you are. Download it today, the Radio Catskill mobile app. Coming up at 7, we've got 2 hours of great music from our own Andy Carlson on Ramble Tamble, followed by Connected Dots with our own David Christian at 9. For now, stay with us. We have more news on the way from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Furniture Restore, located on Main Street in Jeffersonville, specializing in antique and vintage furniture, rugs, art, and lighting, because buying well-made and pre-owned is a better choice for the planet. Online at therestorejville.com. From Grizzly Bagels, small batch, handmade, New York-style bagels in Roscoe, New York. GrizzlyBagels.com. And from listeners like you.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. I play classics you love, deep cuts, and brand new music. Friday nights at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.